studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And in today's segment, we are going to listen to a talk by Brother Prem. Prem needs no introduction to the Radio Sai listeners. All of you heard him just a few minutes ago with Brother Arvind in the afternoon satsang. And he's going to talk about the mother aspect of Swami. And this talk is a perfect blend of experiences and insights, making it very compelling. This is once again from the series of talks that were delivered in the Satsang Hall in Prashanthi Nilayam during the Dasara celebrations of 2013. Stay tuned, dear listeners. After this talk, you'll be treated to some beautiful songs from the album One With You, followed by the live Telugu segment Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari at 3:30 p.m. So over to Brother Prem.
We back in the year 1961, during the month of October, Professor Kasturi took that month's issue of Sanatan Sarthi to Swami. Among the many things that Swami would check in the Sanatan Sarthi, one thing would be what was the picture of Swami which was going along. And that was a practice which remained till the very end. Swami would always choose the picture which would be sent out to his devotees through the Sanatan Sarthi. That being the holy month of October, the month of Dashara, they had a picture of Durga Mata on the page, and on the back side of it was a picture of Swami. And below the picture of Swami were written the words, Satya Sai Mata. Swami looked at the picture, looked at those words, and said, change this. He said, don't write Satya Sai Mata, write Satya Mata. Swami said, because this alone is Satya Mata, all else is Mithya Mata. Offering my most loving pranams at the lotus feet of that Satya Mata, and as always making a prayer that he makes us all understand that he alone is the speaker and he alone is the listener. Brothers and sisters, elders, Sairam to all of you. At the very outset, I begin by expressing my heartfelt appreciation to the PRO, Mr. Murli sir, Mr. Vijay Kumar sir, and his entire team for organizing this wonderful satsang for all of us. Because it is indeed a very special thing to worship God as mother. There are goddesses as mother. The Greeks have worshipped feminine goddesses. You know, the earth is a feminine goddess. And there are so many other goddesses which are worshipped in all cultures. But we have the speciality of worshipping that ultimate God as a mother. And that's the speciality of this month of Dashara, this month. The 9 days, the Navratri festival. And to be given an opportunity to sit and think of Swami as the Divine Mother is indeed a very, very great opportunity, and I consider it an honor to be a part of this celebration. I thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity. A friend of mine once shared with me this very short but sweet incident. His sister was studying the primary school. And one day after the morning games, she was very, very hungry. She was very hungry. She was waiting for the breakfast bell to go. And she was holding a plate in her hand, and she thought the moment the bell goes, she'll run to the dining hall. The bell was given. She was the first person in the line, and to her utter dismay on that day, the breakfast served was noodles. And noodles happened to be this girl's most detested breakfast. She hated noodles. And so she was so upset because she was so hungry, and on top of that she finds these noodles which she never ate. So she ran from the dining hall, locked herself up in the bathroom, and in that anger she started crying. She said, Swami, how can you do this to me? You know how hungry I was, and you also know how much I hate noodles. Why should it be noodles today? And she was so angry, she was so upset. And in that frustration she said, if you really want me to eat these noodles, come and eat it yourself. Just out of frustration. The next thing, she hears some footfall. People are running all around the place. And she comes out of the bathroom and she realizes that everybody is running towards the quadrangle of the hostel because Swami has come into the hostel. So she goes to the quadrangle. The children are all lined up around the porch. Swami comes, stands there. Swami is talking to all the others. And in the meanwhile, the warden and the principal come in. And as always, Swami starts by asking, what's for breakfast today? And the warden very hesitantly comes forward and says, "Swami, it's noodles," because the warden knows that Swami also doesn't like noodles. So he says, she says, "Swami, today we are serving noodles." Purugula, that's how Swami used to call noodles, worms, purugula. Then everybody is smiling. And then Swami says, "Tiskorandi chustamu etla undani." He said, "Bring some, let me taste and see how it is." This girl's heart is beating faster. This was something which she least expected. It was not a prayer that she made. It was a frustration that expressed itself. And here was Swami coming and asking, "Get me some noodles, let me taste." So some noodles were brought in a plate with a spoon. And Swami just had one spoon of that noodles. And in that crowd of 300, 400 students, Swami looked straight at this girl and said, "Now all of you have breakfast." Satya Mata. A senior of ours, quite an elderly person, once shared with me this incident. Very, very beautiful. It was during the summer months, and it was the days of the old Vrindavan, when the glorious old bungalow was in the place of what where Trai is right now. The memories of old Vrindavan are beautiful beyond description, and those who have been a part of that will know. And it was during one of those days when Swami was residing in that old bungalow. And Swami was leaving for Ooty to spend his summer there. Like in the later years, Swami used to spend the summer in Kodaikanal. Those days, Swami used to spend his time in Ooty. So Swami called this senior brother of ours, this boy who, this person who shared the story with me. Swami called him and said, "You stay back." Swami was taking a few students with him, but he said, "You stay back here." Because one of Swami's devotees, Mr. Rama Brahmam, the caretaker of Vrindavan, a very exalted devotee of Swami, a person who captured the Lord through his devotion and his dedication, he was an ailing man then, so he was unwell, and Swami had asked him to stay in the old bungalow itself. So Swami wanted somebody to stay back in the old bungalow and take care of this man when Swami was away. He said, "He's an old person, he needs help when he wants to go to the bathroom. So stay here, and in the nights if he calls you, go and help him with water or take him to the bathroom or whatever he requires." Swami chose this boy because he was a very light sleeper. The slightest of sound would wake him up. So Swami said, "You're the right person for this job." The boy was very glad to be given a task by Swami. And this boy had the habit of sleeping in what was called the safe room. In olden days, big bungalows used to have a safe room. It used to have a huge iron safe. The safe was so huge to be moved around. So before the bungalow was built, they used to place a safe and build the bungalow around it. So what is a safe room will remain a safe room. So this was a safe room, and it continued to be a safe room even after Swami took over that bungalow. But it was a safe room with a difference, because that also used to serve as Swami's inner interview room. So it was a safe room because your secrets also were safe with Swami in that room. So there used to be a chair for Swami there. Swami used to sit there and talk to the devotees. And as always, a footstool. So this boy used to sleep in the safe room using Swami's footstool as his pillow. He said, "I used to get good thoughts if I sleep like that." And Rama Brahmam was housed in a room beside. So every day in the night, Rama Brahmam would wake up sometime in the late hours and call out, "Hey," and this boy would go and help him go to the bathroom. And it was going on fine because this boy, as I said, was a very light sleeper. He had no trouble waking up when called. One day, Ram Brahmam called and this boy didn't wake up. He was in deep sleep. Poor Mr. Ram Brahmam called out a couple of times. This boy didn't respond. So he thought, "Okay, let me get up and go myself." So this elderly gentleman got up and just fell down, because he was very weak and middle of his sleep. And when I say fell down, he was about to fall down, because before he could fall, Swami appeared there and caught him. "Hey, Ram Brahmam, Jakarta." Caught his hand, made sure that he didn't fall. He said, "What do you want to do?" He said, "Swami, I want to go to the bathroom." Caught his hand, took him to the bathroom, switched on the light, finish your work. Waited outside the bathroom. After he came out, helped him wash his legs, flushed the toilet, held his hand, brought him back to the bed. Sat beside him, spoke for 15 minutes. And now this boy heard some noise. Somebody is talking in the next room. So he got up and went there, and Swami vanished by then. And Ramaramam Garu said, "Arey Babu, you have come now. Till now Swami was here." So this boy said, not surprising, he's an old man, he's sick. Maybe he's hallucinating. So he forgot about it. Days passed by, and the remaining days he woke up and helped Ramaramam. Swami came back from Ooty. Swami's car enters the old bungalow. And this boy, being the only student staying in the old bungalow, then he goes up to open the door for Swami. And Swami comes out, and Swami, the first thing Swami asks is, "What are you taking care of, Ramaramam? I had to come and flush the toilet." When you listen to stories like this, do we feel like looking at Swami and saying Akhilanda Koti Brahmanda Nayaka, or just saying Mother? Isn't he the Satya Mata? You know, we can endlessly go on telling stories like this. It would bring tears to your eyes as well as mine. But I think it's established. Speakers have been here before me, and I think they've, without an iota of doubt, established that Swami is the Mother Divine. There is no debate about that. Swami is Divine Mother. But then, in our relationship with that Divine Mother, how old are we? Because this relationship between a mother and a child changes drastically from time to time. If anybody were to ask a little child, an infant, "Do you love your mother?" He or she would say, "Yes, of course." "Why do you like your mother?" "Because she gives me whatever I want. Because she cooks what I want. She takes care of me." But if you were to ask somebody of my age, at least, and I would say, "I thank my mother for the good things she gave me, and I also thank her for the things she did not give me. I will thank her for the times when she extended her protection. I also thank her for the time when she felt that this he has to handle himself." And that is an understanding which comes with age. So are we thanking the Mother Divine for protecting us, for giving us what we want, for giving us happiness? Or are we here to thank the Mother for even things which she refused to give? During the 1980s, one of the world conferences was scheduled. And that was one of the most extravagant world conference. And Swami had promised that on the last day of the conference, he would personally give Pad Namaskar to all the delegates. And along with the delegates who had come in, they were also Swami's students. They were also considered as delegates. So that morning, after the valedictory function, Swami said, "I'll give Pad Namaskar to all the delegates." The gathering was held in the Purnachandra Auditorium. And there were so many delegates that they didn't find place inside the Purnachandra. So they were coming in batches, and Swami was giving them Padnamaskar. And Swami gave Padnamaskar for not less than 25,000 people. For a few hours, batch after batch after batch after batch came in, and Swami was giving them Padnamaskar. And we all know when Swami gives Padnamaskar, he does not just give Padnamaskar. He would have collected a few thousand letters. He would have spoken to a few thousand people. Enormous amount of energy spent. And even the Divine Mother was exhausted. At the end of it, Swami was so tired. Swami's robe was drenched in sweat, and Swami was so drained out. When he finally came to the boys' block, the students' block, you know, that was the only block which was left. A few thousand students now. Or rather, 1,000 students. And Swami came up to them and said, "Boys, I cannot ask anybody else, but I can ask you. I'm too tired today. Can I give you Padnamaskar some other day?" A mother gives even when she does not give. And those students who were there, part of that gathering, today say that that day Swami gave us so much more by not giving. Because he said, "I can take liberties with you." Shirdi Baba used to say that when a mother-in-law wants to correct her daughter-in-law who has just come into the house, she's just got married and she's come into the house, Shirdi Baba used to say, the mother-in-law will shout at the daughter Why are you doing it this way? Don't you know it should not be done this way? Though the mistake would have been done by the daughter-in-law. And Shirdi Baba would say, the daughter will understand. She will not get angry with the mother. So when we grow with age, as a child to this Mother Divine, we give space for this mother to take liberties with us. And the mother will feel that he will understand me, she will understand me, I don't have to worry. I can do what has to be done. No need to package it. He will understand my moves. Mr. Gopal Indreshwar, the grandson of the Rajmata of Jamnagar, the Rajmata who gave the Vrindavan, the land on which the Vrindavan campus stands today, he was narrating this very beautiful incident once. It was during the 1990 summer course, and Swami was in Vrindavan throughout the summer overseeing the arrangements which were going on for the summer course. So every day Swami would come to the university, oversee the gardening work, oversee the painting work. And whenever Swami would come, everybody would drop all their things and surround around Swami. So on one such day, Mr. Indreshwar, he was a boy in his first or second UG then, having the luxury of his house just in the next compound, he sneaked into his house during the work time. He thought, let me just have a sip of cold coffee and come back. And after all, I've worked out so much the whole day, I've worked so hard. It wouldn't be too much of a transgression of discipline to go and have a sip of refreshing drink. But unfortunately, when he went, Swami came. So when he came out of his house, he saw that there was a gathering of students and staff in front of the university and realized that Swami had come there. So he wished to join the group. So he came out. So he said that if I get noticed, then people will know that this boy has gone out somewhere and now he is coming in. So he thought, if I can go and stand behind Swami, I'll also be close to Swami and I'll also be not noticed by Swami. So it will be a win-win situation. So he sneaked slowly. And if those of you have seen the Vrindavan campus, the beautiful embossment of Mother Saraswati forms the front part of the building. And in front of it is the small fountain, a circular fountain. And Swami was standing in front of that fountain. So he went and stood between Swami and the fountain, right behind Swami. So he was happy that he was not noticed. And Swami was looking at the statue and making comments. He said, who painted this? He seems to have given a lipstick to Saraswati, and you know, little fun talk was going on. And he was also enjoying it, standing right behind Swami. But suddenly Swami did a U-turn, 180 degrees. And he was face to face with Swami. He didn't expect that. And Swami looked at him and said, bad boy. So he said, okay, got caught. So he put his head down. Then Swami did something which, Swami started walking towards him, menacingly pacing towards him. So he got a bit scared and he started taking steps behind. And Swami was coming forward, he's going back, and came to a point where he could go no further back. And if he did, he would fall into the fountain. So he stood there, and Swami kept coming close to him. And Swami came so close, he could almost feel Swami's hair on his forehead. That's how close Swami was. But not a very pleasant moment, because Swami was staring at him with all anger. And Swami said, bad boy. He again put his head down in shame and said, yes, Swami. He accepted it because he knew that he had done something which was worth being punished for. So he said, yes, Swami. And then Swami said, now tell everybody what you did. And who all were there? All the VIPs, the Vice Chancellor, the Registrar, the Controller, and all the other dignitaries. And he felt it was such a small offense to confess in front of such a august gathering. No, what am I supposed to tell them? I went to my house and had a cup of cold coffee. Is that what I'm supposed to tell them? But Swami was not relenting. He said, confess. Tell them what you did. So this boy was, embarrassed that maybe a mistake which was a little more bad would have been a better thing to confess in this situation. He was wondering, Swami, what do I tell? And then Swami did something. Swami told a long sentence in Tamil. This boy knew Telugu, but Swami told in Tamil. A long sentence in Tamil and said, yes, Chepu. He said, Swami, what is this? He he realized that whatever Swami said, what he was supposed to understand is just chappu. But by the time he could, you know, gather his senses together and realize what to do, Swami had already told this thing 3 times, repeating this whole sentence at table and saying, yes, chappu. So he said, okay, no other choice. Yes, Swami. Confession. But the boy has no idea what he has confessed to. And then Swami said, now tell everybody what you did. He said, Swami, I have no idea. What have I confessed to? And then Swami went on to explain to the whole gathering what this boy had done. In fact, the gathering included him too, because he also didn't know what he had done. And Swami said, you know, this boy, he sat with Colonel Jugarao, one of the elderly person who was in charge of the proceedings of the summer course, and took the list of all the guests who were coming for the summer course and asked him, who are all the guests who have pretty daughters? We have a good guest house in our compound. We can host a few guests there. So I want to know who are all the guests who have pretty daughters. And this boy was absolutely flabbergasted. He said, no, who would believe such a thing? Forget who would do such a thing, but who would believe such a thing? And, the very atrociousness of this confession that Swami had asked him to make made him smile. But Swami was very serious. Swami was very angry and very serious. He said, what's happening here? I thought this is going to be a joke, but Swami is very serious. And then Swami stormed out of there, and he saw that every elder was looking at him and giving him a scorn and walking off. So he said, this is so surprising. You know, what an allegation to make against me, and why would Colonel Jugarao sit with me and discuss this first of all? So he went back home, and he went to his house, and he told all the people what happened. And everybody had a hearty laugh, because they all felt that this could be nothing more than a joke. But he was a little disturbed. He said, forget the joke, forget whatever happened, but is Swami really upset with me? Is Swami angry with me? You know, because if Swami is upset, then you would lose 3 or 4 days of beautiful interaction with Swami. So he walks out of his house, and even as he comes out of his house, he finds a car driving in, and who should he find there? Of all, Colonel Jugarao is driving in his white Maruti. And comes out of the car and says, hey Gopal, I was wondering, I heard that you have a guest house in your compound, and I was actually wondering, can we host a few guests in your compound? And then it struck this boy, oh, so what Swami gave was a premonition. Swami was trying to tell us that something is going to happen like this, and if you do in a certain way, I'm going to be upset with it. So the moment this thing happened, he realized, and he also understood that the message for him was, you don't get involved in it. So the first thing he did was, sir, elders are there inside, you go and talk to them. I have no say in all these things. And he walked off. By then the family members also had got the clue that Swami wanted this to be conveyed in a very polite manner, that the guest house was not available. So they also very politely refused. So the situation was handled by Swami. But now this boy goes back and he's wondering, is Swami upset with me? So that day Swami comes to him and very compassionately looks at him and says, Gopal, did you think I'm angry with you? So boy gets up and says, yes Swami, I thought that you were very upset with me. Then Swami said, no, I'm not upset with you. But you see, apna hai to kuch bhi kar sakta hai. Because you are mine, I can do anything with you. I don't have to hesitate. Because you are mine, I can take liberties with you. And I know that you will understand. Will we be infants at the lap of this mother Sai? Smiling in joy when he gives us things which we want, and crying and kicking in anger when he refuses what we want? Or will we have the higher understanding that if he gives, when he does not give, still he gives, when he smiles and speaks sweetly, he loves, when he slaps, when he is angry, still he loves. So how old are we? This happened to another student. He was just completing his MBA, and Swami had fixed the marriage of his elder brother to a family which was very devoted to Swami. And Swami had promised that he would perform the wedding. So everything was set. This boy was still completing his last few days in the Prashantinilayam campus, doing his MBA. And Swami was going on with the preparation of the marriage of his elder brother in Puttaparthi, in Vrindavan. And Swami was calling the families of both the bride and the bridegroom continuously and giving instructions about the wedding preparations. And on that particular interview day, Swami was finalizing the words for the invitation which would go out. So Swami was saying they put like this, traditionally this should be done. And there Swami pulled a surprise for the whole family. Swami said, put the younger son's name also. And put this girl's younger sister as the bride. He said, Swami, he has just finished his MBA. I don't think he's going to be interested in marriage and definitely not so soon. Swami says, no, you put my command. So Swami, shall we call up and tell him that this is what Swami is saying? Swami says, no, don't tell him. Nobody should tell him, I will tell him. So the invitations are printed with the boy's name. The boy is giving his final exams in Prashantinilayam, MBA exams. His marriage is being conspirated behind him in Vrindavan. And Swami has told all his classmates and all his teachers, nobody should tell him that he's getting married. So this boy comes back after his exams. And the day he lands in Vrindavan, one of his classmates comes and says, hey, congratulations, man. So everybody is like, hey, why did you tell him? He's not supposed to know. So the boy makes up saying that, no, congratulations, your brother is getting married, right? So congratulations to you. So the thing is settled. That evening, Swami calls the whole family for an interview. So this is the moment of reckoning. Swami is going to reveal the news. So there Swami is. Swami asks for the invitation in which is printed this boy's name and his marriage. And Swami hands over this invitation to this boy. And everybody is looking at this boy's face. What's going to be the reaction? Is it shock? Is it anger? Is it disbelief? They're all looking at his face. And more eager than all of them is Swami. Swami is also looking at his face. What is his reaction going to be? The boy reads through the entire invitation with no change of expression on his face. He just reads the entire invitation and hands it back to Swami. And Swami looks at him and says, He says, what, Swami? Did you read the invitation? He said, yes, Swami. Is it okay? I have fixed your marriage also. Is it okay for you? Without even the slightest protest, this boy says, Swami, whatever you choose, Swami, is okay for me. What you give me, I accept. And needless to say, Swami would have been the first person to burst out of that interview room, go around telling everybody, look at my boy. Can we grow up to that level of acceptance? The fact is, we do have that level of acceptance, but not universally. There are some things which we readily accept, some things which we don't readily accept. But can we grow up as children to the divine? And Swami would often say this, give this analogy, he would say that, when a mother cooks food, the infant she would feed herself. She would decide when the infant has food and she feeds. When you grow up a little, when you're a school child, a third or fourth standard, you come and tell the mother, I'm hungry, and the mother feeds you. You're a little older, the food is kept on the table and the mother tells, help yourself. And maybe when you're a little older, when you stay away from the mother, you cook and you eat yourself. So the way Swami treats his devotees is based on which level are you in. But having said this, I want to reverse the order. We spoke of growing up as children, but I want to talk of growing younger, growing back to childhood. When we become elders, let us say we are 40, 50 year old, we still respect our mothers, we still give a lot of reverence to our mothers. But the role that a mother plays in our life changes. When you have an 80 year old mother, she's given a lot of respect. When you buy a new house, you go and tell her, mother, I bought a new house, please come. When you buy a new car, you take her around. When you make a decision, you go and tell her, I've made this decision. But that is all her involvement in the family. She is not the center of your life. She is still given reverence, but she is not the center of your life. Like most of us do. When we start a new business, we come to Swami and say, Swami, I'm starting a new business. When we're getting somebody married, we come and tell Swami, Swami, I'm getting my children married. Please bless. Just bless. Nothing more. No more interference. One of our visiting faculty members of the Board of Studies, Mr. Pandurang Vittal, during the 70th birthday, Swami came and told him, come for the 70th birthday with your entire family. You can have Vishwarupa Darshan, Swami told him. And Swami gave him instruction, bring your entire family. Your wife's side, your uncles, aunts, everybody, bring all of them for 70th birthday. So he was very well prepared and he wanted to bring all of them. He lives in Bangalore. But you know, things the way they happen in families, very suddenly two marriages were fixed among close relatives. And it was just around Swami's birthday time. So now he was faced with a very precarious predicament. He said, what do I choose now? Do I go for these marriages? Should I come for Swami's birthday? Because it would be a big offense to not attend those marriages, very close family members. So when he was caught in this dilemma, one night he gets a dream. And Swami tells him, see Vithal, your heart is like a mansion, a multi-room mansion. In one room, you have your professional life, your colleagues, your teaching, your students. In another room, you have your family, your wife, your children. In another room, you have your relations. And in one another room, you have Swami. If you relate to Swami in this manner, then Swami will be a part of your life, but Swami will not become the center of your life. You have given a space for Swami in your life. And the moment he woke up, he realized that the choice was very obvious for him. He quit even ruminating over the thing and he attended Swami's 70th birthday. So when we are elders and Swami is our mother, we give this kind of a place to Swami in our life. So we should start growing younger in this relationship. We have to start growing older in our understanding, but we have to start growing younger in our relationship with God. And slowly we come to the state of a teenager where still the mother takes the decision, but the boy or girl has the leverage to protest. He says, no, I don't want it. No, I want it. But still the mother makes the choice. So that is the next level where Lord takes the decisions, but you're not sure. You know, you can protest. And then you come to the younger state. When you're a child, when you're an infant, where the mother makes all the decisions for you. The world is your mother. You might see a million things in the market, but you have to ask the mother. There are so many things which attract you, but you always ask only from the mother. There might be a million things which you might want, but if you have to ask, you ask only your mother. You don't ask anybody else. And that is the other level of devotion. Where we are still arthas and artharthis, we have our own wants and desires, but we know that if we have to ask, we ask only God. We don't ask the whole world. But this also is not the final state. We go to the state of being an infant in the child's arm, where the nourishment for the child is only from the mother. There is no other food which the child takes. So the child does not even know, I want this, I want that. He just cries when it wants, it is given the food. But the beauty is a state which is more deeper than this. But before this, I skipped one beautiful incident which I wanted to narrate, where giving importance to Swami, a very nice incident. It happened in old Vrindavan. Those days, boys used to study in the Bangalore University. They used to stay in the Vrindavan hostel, but study in the Bangalore University. They used to be awarded degrees and medals from the Bangalore University. So there was this one boy who had got 4 gold medals in that year. Imagine working in all the Gokulam and plowing the fields and tending to the cattle and repairing fans and tube lights. These boys would excel in university studies also. So this boy had got gold medals. And he was being awarded the gold medal by the governor of the state. So this boy went to attend the convocation ceremony. And when his name was called, he went up to Swami, he went up to the governor. And when the governor was about to put the gold medal around him, he said, "Sir, I have a small request to make." He said, "Please don't put the gold medal around me. I want to take this gold medal to my master. I want to take this to Bhagwan, and I want him to put this gold medal around my neck." And that governor was indeed so moved by this person's request, and he very happily gave the gold medal in his hand. And this boy rushed to Vrindavan because Swami might retire for the day. So caught 2-3 buses, rushed to Vrindavan, gate crashed into Vrindavan when Swami was about to retire. He gave the gold medal to Swami and said, "Swami, this is the gold medal, please put it around my neck." That is a relationship which will come when we start growing younger as a child in our dependence to God. Can that happen? We spoke of being an infant. The next state is even more interesting. The state before we are born. The relationship between an unborn child and his mother. When the child is in the womb of the mother. The Lalita Sahasranamam describes the goddess, the mother, as Vishwagarbha, the one who has the whole cosmos in her womb. What is the meaning of this? Swami says, "I am above you, I am below you, I am before you, I am behind you, I am all around you." How can we make sense of this statement? We can, if we imagine that we are in the womb of the divine. Because it is when the child is in the womb, the mother is above, below, before, behind, and all around the child. And what is the essence of being in that state where you are in the womb of the mother? You don't ask. The child in the womb does not cry when it's hungry. When it's hungry, the food is given. When warmth is required, the warmth is given. When antibodies are required, antibodies are given. When nourishment is required, nourishment is given. There is no asking there. There is no pleading there. Where you come to the state where you don't look at the God and say, "Give me this." When a need arises, you know that if there is a need, the blessing will come. I don't need to ask. And that is the state we will be in when we grow younger and become the child in the womb. In Vishwagarbha. You know, before I joined Radio Sai, this was a predicament which used to face all of us. We had finished our studies. We were waiting for Swami to give us a job. And Swami, in his own way, would never look at us. Sometimes talk, sometimes not talk. And people would say that, you know, "You need help. Why don't you go and approach somebody who can take your case to Swami? Why don't you go and approach the secretary? Why don't you go and approach the vice chancellor? Why don't you go and approach the boys who are in Swami's room? Tell them your problem. Give them a card." And oftentimes when we used to sit as a group and wonder, we used to think of this. That if we imagine ourselves to be infants in the womb of the mother, why should we ask? And why should we think that if it is not given, it is not given because you have not asked? It is not given because it is not supposed to be given. We don't need it right now. And if there is a need, it will be given. Can we treat our relationship with this mother in this manner every day? Whenever a need arises, say that, "Yes, there is a need. But if it is necessary that it should be fulfilled, it will be fulfilled. I don't need to ask." And in the Narada Bhakti Sutra, Vishnu tells Narada, he says to that devotee who comes to me and asks, whenever he has a need, he'll come only to me and ask. a very, very, you know, childlike devotee. Whenever he needs something, he'll come and cry to the God. I will give him whenever he asks. Just like a mother, when the child cries, the child is fed. But that devotee who does not ask me, who has a need but does not ask me, I am ever behind him to give him what he needs at the right time. Because it becomes all my responsibility. It's the mother's responsibility, the mother's body's responsibility to nourish the child in the womb. There is no asking, there is no reply. It is instantaneous. You know, a few years back, a raging debate among the civil society was about, a small digression here, about the rights to abort a child. There's been a heavy debate on this, and the crucial fact became, when do you consider a child to be a living entity? Because you can say that if you kill the child after that, it's equal to murder. And it's a crime. So when do you consider a child in the womb as being an individual entity? When does the child start to exist on its own? This has been a debate in philosophy, in theology, in science too. And interestingly, nobody seems to know when the child actually comes alive. When the child becomes separate from the mother. Some say when the child, when that single cell organism starts multiplying, it becomes life. But there are so many other cells in our body which are multiplying every day. Does that mean that each of those cells are separate entities? Every day when we take bath, when we shave, we discard so many cells. Does that equate to murder? Because we are killing cells which can grow. So some people say that that single-celled embryo is itself alive. But some say no. Then some say that when the DNA is there, the DNA is formed, the final DNA is formed, you know, the embryo is alive by itself. But there are so many other cells in our body which have the DNA. Then some say when the brain is formed, when the brain starts forming. But the brain's activity is not complete until much later in the stage of development. So it's only a vestigial organ in the embryo. So how can you say it's a separate entity? Then some say when the heart is formed, that there are so many other enzymes being pumped in, pumped out in the other cells of the body. This is just another function like that. Then how can you say that this describes that an entity is born? So nobody can actually say when the child separates from the mother, when the child actually becomes an individual distinct entity. So from this state of being an unborn child in the womb of the mother, can we go younger, younger, younger and seamlessly dissolve into that oneness? Where we are no more mother and child, where the mother alone exists. And when the mother alone exists, the motherhood vanishes. Isn't it not? You know, a teacher asks a student in class, "Hey boy, how old are you?" The boy says, 15 years old. So then she asks, "How old is your mother?" He says, "Madam, 15 years old. He says, "How can that be?" The boy says, "My mother was born when I was born. Till then she was not a mother." So can we go back to that state, slowly slipping from that state of being an adult to a teenager to an infant to a child in the mother's arm to an unborn child, a fetus to the embryo, and seamlessly dissolve into that oneness? Is it possible? You know, in Jnanavahini, Swami makes a very beautiful statement there. He says, wisdom, jnana or vidya, is born out of maya. Only where there is maya, jnana can be born. Only where there is darkness, light is born. Otherwise, light always exists. Light can be born only when there is darkness. So wisdom can be born only where there is maya. So he says, in that sense, maya is the mother and wisdom is the child. And Swami says, when wisdom is born, it performs matricide, the killing of the mother. Because the moment wisdom is born, it kills the mother maya. And this is not a crime as we understand. It's a holy killing. The child is born for this very purpose. The child is born for performing this matricide of Maya. So though we all spend all our time looking at God and worshipping God as the mother, because it is indeed important, because we can understand God through the relationship. But even as we do that, we have to remember that we are trying to understand the spiritual relationship with a worldly relationship. And we should always remember not to make the spiritual relationship into a worldly relationship. And also not make worldly relationships into spiritual relationships. We are only using this to understand that. Swami says, when a thorn gets into your feet, you take another thorn and remove that thorn. And once the thorn is removed, both the thorns are thrown away. The thorn which is used to remove the thorn is not considered sacred and kept and preserved. Similarly, this worship of mother is indeed sacred. It's so helpful. It is so fruitful for us. But at the end of it, we should remember that this also has to be discarded, because that is the very purpose of this thorn. We are not expected to do matricide. We are not expected to kill Mother Sai, but we are supposed to kill the motherhood of Sai. We have to come to the state where no more we look at him and say, "Your mother, I am the son." Once Swami asked a boy, he said, "Boy, what am I to you? How do you relate to me?" And the student said, "Swami, you're Mother Sai, you're my mother." Swami paused for a moment and said, "How can I be your mother when you and I are one?" This is indeed helpful. Let us revere it for that. It's an instrument. And that is one of the important festivals we do during this period, right? The Dashara, we do the Ayudha Puja. We revere, respect and worship the instrument. But ever keep in mind that this is only an instrument. I'm sitting here as a speaker and you're all listening to me. Yes, you're listening to me in rapt attention, but always in the back of the mind there should be that idea that this is just an instrument. The message is coming to us. And I'm sitting here and looking at all of you as audience. Maybe that is giving me the enthusiasm to speak, but always I have to remember that this is just an instrument where the wisdom is coming from within. And as Swami says, your ears are closest to your mouth and you're your first listener. You know, once a student was having a small tiff with Swami. He had a little fight with Swami and Swami was not talking to him. And you know, typically the example which I gave of Shirdi Baba saying how a mother treats the daughter-in-law, how the mother corrects the daughter-in-law through the daughter, that used to be a common practice with Swami. Swami would penalize a student for things which he has not done, because that will help correct somebody else. And that will help this person introspect also. It's not always for the other person. So this boy was going through that phase and he was wondering why Swami is treating him the way he's treating. And he said, "I've not done any mistake and Swami is being unfair. This is not right." So this boy went on a hartal. He said, "I'm not going to eat now. And Swami is my mother. And if I don't eat, he should be pained and he will be pained and he'll come and embrace me and console me and even apologize." You know, that's what we think. So this boy went without food and he had also made up his mind that, you know, "I'm not going to go and tell Swami that I've not had food. Swami is all knowing. Swami should know. Why should I go and tell Swami?" So this was going on for a few days. He had not had food. He was skipping session after session. And Swami also was not even, you know, giving the least importance to his fast. You're not even wondering why this boy is fasting or ayo papam, nothing. Swami is continuing to ignore him. 3 days pass, 4 days pass. Then finally Swami calls all the bhajan boys for an interview. And this boy, you know, in all that anger, he says, "I'm not going to go anywhere near Swami. I'm going to sit right behind. Because I'm not going to tell Swami that I've not had food. Swami should know it himself." He goes and sits right behind. And Swami is making fun, making, you know, materializing things, laughing, cracking jokes. And this boy is boiling. "I've not had food here." And Swami is least bothered. And Swami is 1.5 hours. singing bhajans, correcting songs, and all things happening, and this boy is not able to resist. Finally, he gets up and, you know, blasts. He says, "Swami, how can you be so cruel?" Swami says, "Why, what happened?" He says, "Swami, I have not had food for 3 or 4 days. So what?" And this boy says, "Swami, if I had been at my home, and if I had not had my food, my mother would come, and she would have tears in her eyes. She would embrace me and feed me with her own hands. And you say you have the love of 1,000 mothers, and you're least bothered about my pain, about my hunger." No change of expression on Swami's face. Swami is the same stern self. And this boy is all the more infuriated. "What is this? Swami, are you the one of 1,000 mothers? Are you the love of 1,000 mothers? And Swami says only one statement. Swami says, "I am not your body's mother. I am not your body's mother. To take care of your body, I have given another mother. I am not your body's mother." Of course, it does not mean that Swami never took care of our bodies. But this is a truth which always has to be remembered. Because often, we question Swami's motherly love only based on what he does to this body. "He didn't look at me. He didn't speak to me. He didn't give me what I want. I was in an accident. Swami did not protect me." Swami protected that person. We always relate to Swami as a mother only based on this body, but the fact is Swami is not this body's mother. And the role of this whole worship of considering Swami as a mother is to end this motherhood. How can I be your mother when you and I are one? Maybe I'll just quickly sum up whatever I said. I began by saying that, you know, whatever Swami does, whatever Swami says, has proved to us beyond doubt that He is the Mother Divine. There's no doubt about that. He has proved that His love is that of 1,000 mothers. And Swami has told us in many occasions that I say that I have a love of 1,000 mothers because it's a love which you have understood. A mother's love is something which you have realized and experienced. So when I say it's of 1,000 mothers, you can understand. It's like saying that Sahasra Shirusha Purusha. It does not mean that Lord has only 1,000 heads. It just means that so many. You know, I can't count. So Sahasra Shirusha. So it's like that, 1,000 mothers love. But the question remains, what age are we to that mother? And first I spoke about seeing mother, being a mother, and understanding that mother's love, depending on how old we are, like an infant only thanks the mother for the good things, thanks the mother for the protection. But an adult, in his wisdom or her wisdom, thanks the mother for what she gave and what she did not give. Thank the mother for being kind and being stern. But at the same time, we have to grow back into childhood in the importance we give to this mother, from being an adult and treating a mother just as an object of reverence, to bringing that mother as an active central part of our life, to slowly coming back to infanthood, to being a child in the mother's arms, and making the mother one's life, from being mother being the center of our life to being the mother being our life, to relate to Swami like that, and slowly go back to that unborn state, where that state is that of perfect devotion, Atma Nivedanam, complete surrender, when nothing is asked. I don't have to ask. You give me what I need. And then going back to that state where we are absolutely not sure when the duality happened, and seamlessly go into that oneness where the mother no more exists. Praying to Swami that He takes us all back to that state where we slowly, without our knowledge, painlessly, with ease of understanding, slip into that state of oneness. I offer this talk at Swami's lotus feet, and I thank you all for your patient listening. Thank you, Jai Sairam.
Such a beautiful sound. such a beautiful sound. Om, 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 Hari Om. The Lord gave the world such a beautiful sound.
Beautiful sound, Om 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 Hari Om.
how I need you. Guard and guide me, oh my Lord, night and day, oh my Lord. I am just your child, my Lord. Hold me in your arms, my Lord. Life, my Lord, is like an ocean deep and blue. Storms will blow, but I will always cling to you. Pain and joy are but a passing phase. Till we merge, my Lord, I yearn for your grace.
Oh,
take it all in your hand.
Oh Lord, take my love,
Let it flow in full devotion to Thee, Lord.
Let it flow in full devotion to Thee, Lord.
O Lord, take my hands, let them work unceasingly for Thee. With Thee.
Oh Lord, take my soul, let it work in perfect oneness with Thee.
Oh Lord, take my mind, let my thoughts be in tune with Thee.
Oh Lord, take my mind, let my thoughts be in tune with Thee.
Oh Lord, take my everything, and let me be an instrument for Thee.
Take my everything, and let me be an instrument for Thee.
Oh Lord, take my love, let it flow in full devotion to Thee. Take my hands, let them work unceasingly for Thee.
Oh Lord, take my hands, let them work unceasingly for Thee.
Oh Lord, take my soul, let it merge in perfect oneness with Thee. Take my mind, let my thoughts be in tune with Thee.
Oh Lord, take my mind, let my thoughts be in tune with Thee.
Oh Lord, take my everything, and let me be an instrument for Thee. Take my everything, and let me be an instrument for Thee.
Take my everything, and let me be an instrument for Thee.
Oh Lord, take my love, let it flow in full devotion to Thee.
Twa meva bandhus cha sakha, twa meva Tvameva Vidya, Pranam Tvameva, Tvameva Sarvam, Mama Deva Deva.
From thee, शिव तुम हो सत्य स्वरूप